Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
Stu does America.
Follow the show on YouTube, youtube.com/Stu does America. Be sure to subscribe and hit the bell so you'll know every single time that we post or go live or maybe, honestly, whenever you're there, you just check it out. Just click on it anyway. Even if you don't follow it, just click to the page and then watch like 14 videos and then you can leave. It's almost like the price to get in. Dan Andros is here to explain why he's joining the fight to get WNBA members paid. Sure, that's how he feels about it. I'll look at the latest of the very awkward Coldplay moment that the world has been talking about. But we're going to start by doing the truth about Colbert's exit. This is something that happened while I was on vacation, by the way. Welcome back to me. Welcome back to you. Sorry for a few of you who were saying like, how come you didn't tell us that you were going on vacation? I don't know. I didn't. I'm sorry. So I apologize if you're looking for new shows last week and we didn't have any. But I wasn't here and I wasn't doing that. So anyway, I appreciate you being here today. Here is Colbert announcing this late last week.
Before we start the show, I want to let you know something that I found out just last night. Next year will be our last season. The network will be ending The Late Show in May. And
sorry, I was in the crowd.
Yeah, I share your feelings. It's not just the end of our show, but it's the end of The Late Show on CBS. I'm not being replaced. This is all just going away.
Yeah, it's a shocking development. CBS News executive said in a statement Thursday night, the decision was not related in any way to the show's performance, content, or other matters happening at Paramount. Show's cancellation comes during a period of upheaval in the world of late-night television as viewers migrate away from traditional broadcast and cable television as advertising revenue for late-night programs plummets. Mr. Colbert's show will end in May when his contract expires. Now, obviously, the first thing you do is you jump to the big conspiracy theory, right? We're told all the time that we on the right are the big conspiracy theorists. Of course, it's not just like podcasters on the left going to conspiracy theories. It's like mainstream left-wing politicians. Elizabeth Warren, CBS canceled Colbert's show just 3 days. She put that in capitals if you happen to be listening on podcast. 3 days after Colbert called out CBS's parent company Paramount for its $16 million settlement with Trump, a deal that looks like bribery. America deserves to know whether his show was canceled for political reasons. Fascinating because, of course, the whole show was political. The whole thing was political. They didn't care about that show being political because it benefited them the entire time. Now that politics might be getting in their way, they don't like it so much. Pramila Jayapal said Stephen Colbert's show was canceled 3 days after he called out Paramount, CBS's parent company, for folding to Trump with a $16 million settlement for a lawsuit that they called without merit. People deserve if it was politically motivated attack on free speech. Almost like they just put the same statement into ChatGPT there. Gonna throw that one out there. CBS's billionaire owners paid Trump $16 million to settle a bogus lawsuit without trying to sell the network to Skydance. Trying to sell the network to Skydance is from Bernie Sanders. Stephen Colbert, an extraordinary talent and the most popular late night host, slams the deal. Days later, he's fired. Do I think this is a coincidence? No! Of course, it's all conspiracy theories. Here's Adam Schiff.
Ever since I led his first impeachment, he's threatened me with jail and prosecution and called me a traitor, accused me of treason, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, all
coerced Republicans into censuring me in the House, and now the latest attack on me. So I just want to direct this, if this is the right camera, or maybe that's the right camera.
That's the right camera right there.
Donald, piss off. But Donald, before you piss off, would you release the Epstein files? come on.
Yeah, there you go. That's hilarious. So that's basically, you had everyone. I mean, the Stacey Abrams one was really funny as well. She does picture after picture after picture after picture of her on Colbert. And it's like, well, maybe that's part of the problem, that he invited you on, this nobody who lost elections over and over and over again, to keep coming back on the show. Maybe that was part of the issue. I don't know. Jim Garrity has a good piece. Ultimately, math ended The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. And he's right. So let's get to the truth about this. Why is he going away? Is it because of politics? Is it because Donald Trump's mean? Is it because Donald Trump wants to, you know, is trying to get the wheels greased to get this Paramount deal through? Let's go through the actual facts on this, because honestly, this happened pretty fast. Forever, late night shows were like the foundation of these networks. They were making a fortune. That has totally changed. A lot of it's happened since COVID, too. Like, it really has fallen apart in the past few years. Late Show with Stephen Colbert was profitable as recently as a few years ago. Now it loses about $40 million a year, according to a person familiar with the budget. Budget for the show, filmed in New York City's Ed Sullivan Theater, which is a building, by the way, that CBS owns, includes a live band, a staff, the host said, numbered 200 people for that crap heap of a show. 200 people? Are they all working to sabotage it? An annual salary of $20 million for Colbert, according to a person familiar with the show operations. The hefty cost of production, a withering business model, and a parent company under pressure struck fatal blows. And of course, like, when you're failing at that scale, it's really hard for a company to continue to float this entire operation. Now, you'd think you'd be able to come and say, can we cut here? Can we cut here? Well, not when you're talking about 40% of your budget being in essentially a deficit. The only people who could pull that off are all the people who were praising Colbert in that last segment. Somehow they continue to run multi-trillion dollar deficits, and they all keep their jobs. I don't know how that works. I do feel bad for Stephen Colbert on that, from that perspective. But it gets worse. 15 years ago, popular late-night show like The Tonight Show could earn $100 million a year. Recently, though, The Late Show has been losing $40 million a year. The show's ad revenue plummeted to $70.2 million from $121 million in 2018. Again, it's basically almost a half was lost since 2018. Ratings for Colbert's show peaked at 3.1 million viewers during the 2017-2018 season, according to Nielsen data. For the season that ended in May, the show's audience averaged 1.9 million. So you've gone from 3.1 million to 1.9 million. That's a pretty dramatic drop off, right? And add into that, the only time that they really had any ratings to be proud of at all was the first year of Trump won, where he kind of came out and decided I'm going to be mean. I'm going to be anti-Trump. That's going to be my lot in life, which he then continued in the most stale way possible for another 8 years. So, I mean, really, if you're Colbert, I think you look at this and just say, look, I collected an eight-figure paycheck for a long period of time. Great. Like, I should be happy with his arrangement. Not very good at this. I mean, again, he's been in the center of multiple shows that looked like juggernauts to watch them blow up. I mean, this is not the first time this has happened with him involved. So, okay, you've got a situation there where it's not really working out all that well financially. But what about the audience? I mean, you know, sure, it's down from 3.1 to 1.9 million, but maybe he was making gains in chosen demographics. That's a big thing that, you know, a lot of times executives will say. They'll say, okay, well, yeah, sure, we lost audience overall. Like when they went from Leno to, who went after Leno? Was it Conan? I don't know. They were like, yeah, but we're getting younger viewers or whatever. This stat's fascinating from Noah Rothman from National Review. The average late show viewer was 60 years old when Colbert took over. The trendy and hip young Comedy Central phenom was supposed to reverse this trend. Today, the average viewer is 68. That's not reversing the trend. I don't think I need to tell you that. Now, I can give you stats all day long on this and how disastrous this was. We can sit here and mock the performance. We can look at this and say 200 people. Good God Almighty. I mean, whenever Stephen Colbert wins an award, you know they've got 200 people because they're all on the stage. There's more people on the stage than the award show audience when he wins an award. It's incredible the bloat that was going on at that place. I could keep giving you stats, or we could just let Dave Portnoy rant about it for a minute.
For these people, including like Colbert, to be like, this isn't really right, that we're blindsided. Buddy, you're losing $40 million a year. You have 200 people creating one show. We have 200 people at Barstool Content Creators creating like 30 shows. And some of them, the bigger ones, draw a bigger audience than Colbert. So, like, what are we talking about? And then you compound that with Colbert openly going on air being like, I don't trust CBS. This relationship can never be repaired. I can't believe they bowed or paid that lawsuit to Trump. If one of my employees, who I was paying $16 million a year while losing $40 million a year, went on their show and was like, I don't like Dave. I don't trust Dave. You know what I would do? Like, welcome to the real world. Yeah, Trump's happy, and this isn't about his politics. I don't love Colbert. I don't think he's funny. I thought he was funny when he's on Comedy Central. I haven't liked him on his Daily Show. But, buddy, you're losing $40 million a year, and then you have the arrogance to go hammer your own company. What did you think was going to happen? Of course they'd fire. I'd fire you in a heartbeat. That's not politics. That's just being ungrateful.
I mean, on and on and on and on, right? Very, very true. And it is part of it, I think. You know, certainly not fun to sit there and be criticized. If you're subsidizing this gigantic loss every year and they're going to come on and yell at you, it certainly probably makes them at least a little bit less torn about doing something like this. By the way, Trump is playing into this. He says Kimmel is next. So he's doing what Trump does. No huge surprise there. But the truth behind the cancellation, sure, it's financial. It is. It's a big part of the story. The fact that they were losing all of this money every single year and spending over $100 million to give you what? To give you that crap heap of a show where he says mediocre jokes about Donald Trump and rolls out a bunch of musical artists that you've never heard of and a bunch of B-level celebrities. This is something that, like, I remember doing a show very early on in my career, and they were like, we need to get some A-listers on. We need to get some A-listers on. Every day, we need one A-lister. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, wait a minute. Like, I'm watching, like, The Tonight Show right now, and they're not getting A-listers every day. Like, this format has been gone for a long, long time. And a lot of it is just the bloat. You got $100 million going to the show that, you know, isn't competitive digitally and was getting blown out by Kimmel and Jimmy Fallon on YouTube and all the rest. And, you know, you have 200 employees. I remember back when Glenn was, an important man in the community. Back in those days, in 2009, when he first is kind of popping onto the scene, and everyone's going crazy for Glenn Beck, and everyone's talking about Glenn Beck all the time. He's one of the most, admired people in America. He made the list for Barbara Walters. Here's a picture of them with their arm. They both have their arms crossed. That's how you know they're serious. They both have their arms crossed. And she came to do the show that she did at the end of the year. May God rest her soul. She did a show at the end of the year, and it would be like, most important people, most influential people. I don't remember how it was worded. It wasn't that influential on me, obviously. But what was influential, did make a mark, was the actual process of Glenn doing that interview. It was an interview that was on TV for maybe like 7 minutes, okay? And they showed up 2 days in advance of the taping. They lined up tractor trailers outside of our office building in Midtown Manhattan. They, and I kid you not, literally closed a block of the city so they could unload equipment for a 7-minute interview. They came up. They had more people in our office than we had in our office. It was our office. There were people everywhere for that interview. They set up. They had light boxes and cameras, every single angle, and dozens of union people. And I mean, it was incredible, the operation. And then they came in there. She finally shows up. She does a 15-minute interview with Glenn, which they edit down to 7, probably, giving the least flattering pieces of the interview on television. And then it was over, and they were gone. And it took another, 12 hours for them to pack everything up. It was absolutely incredible. And I remember sitting there thinking, there's just no way this can last. This model makes no sense. I mean, we're producing content that's reaching more people with, 1/50th of the amount of employees they have. It doesn't make any sense. This can't go on like this. Now, the fascinating thing about this is it's being promoted as this big political thing. Donald Trump has got this deal, and he wants to, he's not going to push it through unless they fire people like Stephen Colbert. Is that true? I mean, I am sure Donald Trump loves, he's reveling in the fact that that Stephen Colbert is going to be gone. But is he really fired? Really, what happened here is they just didn't extend his contract. His contract was up in May anyway, and a lot of this has to do with scheduling. Why did this come out the way that it did. Well, the way these contracts work, not for Colbert, his contract is up in May, but the contract for the producers runs until August. It's September to August. So they had to renew all the producers and underlings contracts here in the coming weeks. Well, they knew they didn't want to do that all the way till next August because the show wasn't going to be on. So if they tell them, hey, we're only getting you till May, that everyone would know something was up and that this was basically over. So when that happened, they had to tell Colbert. Colbert says, and I think, you know, again, I don't like Colbert. I don't think he's a good guy. I don't like love his content, certainly, or his politics. I have heard that he's generally nice to his employees. He was looking to, you know, maybe like give them a little bit of a runway here and say, hey, this show's going to be over. He basically told CBS that he refused to not tell them, right? Like he was like, I'm going to the people, I'm going to tell them. At least this is what the reporting is saying. Now, the fascinating part about this is all the people who are complaining about politics and Trump and all this, well, Colbert is the one. It's the reason why we know about this right now. It wouldn't even be happening in the middle of this particular moment unless Colbert decided he wanted to tell his employees, which I think is admirable at some level. But still, it's not the politicians who decided this. It was Stephen Colbert. Now, of course, Colbert knows that. And yet, is he going to play up the political part of this? Of course, he is. Everybody in the industry who's been talking about this has covered a lot of the same things that I'm covering. I'm not doing original reporting here. This is stuff that is widely known about the show. And even people who hate Trump and even people who know, who would love to believe that the politics from Donald Trump were the reason for this, are admitting the truth, which is, look, this is just a failing operation. It was going to go away anyway. And there's more to it than just the fact that they're losing money. It's also that, like Stephen Colbert, isn't a guy who's out hosting the Oscars, right? He's not doing all these extra side things. He's not integrated into the network like, you know, maybe a Jimmy Fallon is, or maybe even a Jimmy Kimmel. He's kind of out there doing his show. And when your show is a complete failure, like his is, I mean, he turned a plus $100 million show into a minus $40 million show. That is really hard to do. It's really hard to do, but he did it. And it says quite a bit that they're not even attempting to try to just do a scaled back version of it. Do you really need 200 employees? You can't do like with 30? I mean, it's funny because the left has been complaining for months and months and months and months since the election that they need to get their own left-wing Joe Rogan. Now, first of all, I don't know if you've noticed, Joe Rogan was a left-wing Joe Rogan until you convinced him to not be a left-wing Joe Rogan anymore. But you're telling me you couldn't just get a guy like that, an up-and-coming person, and say, hey, we're going to do a podcast type of thing and we're going to air it here and it's going to cost, you know, instead of $100 million or $120 million, it's going to cost us $10 million and we can make a profit there. They're not even trying that. They didn't even go to Colbert and say, look, what about doing this? They didn't even attempt it. Partially because I think they correctly view Colbert as so divisive that he is hurting their audience no matter what. But this is their chance, I guess, to finally find their liberal Joe Rogan, and they don't even attempt it, at least not yet. I will say eliminating half of your audience by doing nothing but really shticky, bad Trump comedy every single night does not help. And I know from the right, we'd like to say, well, this is all from that. It's not all from that. Other shows are also losing money. There's not a lot of examples of, you know, of shows that don't just bash Trump 24/7. But Greg Gutfeld is an exception. He's doing better than all these shows at this point. So there is something too, maybe embracing something that you. I mean, and Gutfeld makes fun of both sides. He'll make fun of Trump sometimes. There is a situation where maybe that's something that people can do. But this idiotic narrative that they're like, oh, this has to do with this deal. Look, is it a slightly beneficial thing for Paramount going through this to be able to say to Donald Trump, look, I mean, Colbert's not even going to be there anymore. Like, you should like us. Sure, there's other backroom dynamics. The leadership from CBS trying to endear itself with the new people, saying, hey, we'll do the tough thing. I think that could be part of it as well. And then you also have the added part of this, which is Jon Stewart's show. Now, that airs tonight. He is on, and surely we'll be talking about this. Going to be fascinating to see. A lot of people are like, he's gonna quit. I don't know. I don't buy that. First of all, people like money. But secondly, you know, of course, he has a bunch of other employees on the show that would also lose their jobs and blah, 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 blah. Will he be critical of Trump? Will he be critical of Colbert? Sure, I'm sure he will. But, you know, the news is, and this, I'm not breaking news to anybody here, Daily Show doesn't make money either. None of these shows make money. They are sitting here flailing around, attempting to hold on to their licensing fees when it goes to cable networks or cable providers. That's all they're doing there. But at least The Daily Show's supposed to be political, right? The Daily Show's supposed to be political. Does it have to be liberal? No. You know, occasionally you'd hear Jon Stewart even, I mean, Jon Stewart was one of the first people on the left, at least, to make fun of Joe Biden for him not being able to form complete sentences. He will occasionally do stuff that's not only left, but at least it's supposed to be a political show. You could take it from there. What happened with Colbert is he took a show that was supposed to be down the middle, could make fun of both sides, should appeal to everyone, a broad appeal show, and made it a narrow cast, made it into, hey, only 30 or 40% of the country really hates Trump enough to appreciate this show anymore. Let's give that a whirl. And that failed. They know. And you know who else knows all of this information, by the way? Stephen Colbert and Jimmy Kimmel, who's out there protesting this, and Jimmy Fallon, and all these guys that are going to sit here, and Jon Stewart, who complain about this over and over again. They all know the finances. They all know all the background. They all know the contract deadlines and everything that was playing into this. What they're going to do, it seems, is take a path of choosing their own ignorance, choosing to deny what they know, and instead just blame this on Donald Trump because it's so much easier. And I will grant you, I'm sure from their perspective, it is easy. Makes them look like a hero. All the politicians kiss their ass and tweet about how great they are. I'm sure there is a path there that feels pretty darn good. But in the end, maybe choosing truth every once in a while is an approach worth taking. You ever feel like every diet wants to ruin your day, your life? You know, starvation and frustration and zero results. And that's where Lean comes in. They're like, look, you've tried this other stuff. Why not try something different? It's a doctor-formulated supplement built to support weight loss without the extreme nonsense. No punishing food plans, no gimmicks, just real ingredients designed to help you hit your goals. In fact, one of those ingredients is a rare edible cactus from India, and it naturally helps reduce appetite. It manages your cravings, and it supports healthy blood sugar. That means more energy and less of the daily willpower battle. And when your body starts turning stored fat into fuel, you will feel the difference. Lean fits right into your real everyday life. It works with you, not against you. Are you ready to drop pounds the smarter way? Well, you can go to takelean.com. Use the promo code STU20. You'll save 20% today. It is takelean.com. The promo code is STU20. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease, and it's not a substitute or alternative for care from a healthcare provider.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Tchibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffeegrande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Tchibo-Filiale und auf tchibo.de.
I want to bring in Dan Andros. He's managing editor at CBN News, host of CBN's Quick Start podcast, which you can subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts, and of course also noted WNBA expert. Dan, welcome to the program.
Yep, I know. If you want to comment on the WNBA, I'm your guy.
Yeah. You didn't think that was going to be your lot in life now, did you?
No. I did maintain that I thought when I was soon out of college, I thought I could be a WNBA All-Star.
Right.
Which I stand by as a mediocre, underachieving Division III player. Mm-hmm. I still think I could have done pretty well in the WNBA.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate, which is sort of the foundation of our little discussion here today, Dan. Yeah. Because the WNBA, apparently the players at the All-Star game, which was, apparently this weekend, which I would not have known. They were a little fired up, and they have decided to go and make a big plea for more cash. Now, of course, it's always no problem. I got no problem asking for more cash. It's a very normal thing that you do as an employee for any organization. They decided to do it in this form. Here's Caitlin Clark wearing the shirt that everyone was wearing. Pay us what you owe us, which... Maybe we just start there, Dan. I just don't think that's the message they want to communicate.
No, I mean, generally, when you go into a negotiation situation, what is the number one thing you want to have? Leverage. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to actually have leverage. Now, when What would you have to have if you were a highly touted WNBA player and you're looking at demanding more money? There would have to be more money there. Like, there would have to be them hoarding all this money and use, and then saying, well, pay us what we deserve. But when you look at the numbers of the WNBA, it is consistently, now they have grown in revenue. That is true. Since like 2018, it was at about 100 million a year. Then COVID hit. They don't have an exact number for that. It was probably pretty bad. Obviously not all their fault there, but in the last couple of years, then it's gone to 130 million in 2022, then 180 million in 2023, and then around 180 plus million. But the law, it's an operating loss every year of 10 million pretty consistently. Even when they increase and scale up some revenue, they still lose about $10 million a year. But then last year, Stu, this is the weird one. And oh, and then the NBA subsidizes about $15 million a year.
Right.
So it's like you've got 10 million in losses. The NBA is subsidizing $15 million a year. What are you complaining for? I think Babylon Bee said it best. They said, uh-oh, WNBA players demand to be paid what, you know, they're owed, and they're like, now they owe the NBA hundreds of millions of dollars. It's like,
yeah, here's the headline, by the way.
Yeah, there it is.
WNBA players demand to be paid what they're worth, and now they owe the NBA $400 million. I love this quote that was in the article as well. We may have made a mistake here, said WNBA player Angel Reese. Can we go back to having a bunch of the guys' money? It turns out I really like not getting paid what I'm worth and taking free money from a man. Please. So there you go. That's the Babylon
Bee. Very funny.
Responding very accurately.
Very funny, Stu, quote there, but also, you know, it's fake news when like Angel Reese would have figured all that out. they just wear her and all the other people wear the t-shirt and they're like, oh, give me more money. But this is pretty wild though, even on the advent of Caitlin Clark, that last year they lost $40 to $50 million. So it's like, they just started spending more like, yay, we've got a savior here. Like, what this paints, Stu, and I'd love to hear your take on what this financial picture and these requests paint. But to me, like they said, like, oh, we're going to start getting paid now with Caitlin Clark. I'm looking at this thinking Caitlin Clark is saving the existence of the league potentially. And they're blowing it. They're just spending more money. I mean, this operates like every dumb government bureaucracy we've ever made fun of.
Yeah, no, it's true. I that's the culture of a league that was built on subsidizing funds from the NBA, right? Like the NBA makes a lot of money. They dish out a little bit of money with the hope really of what happened, right? Like it took them a lot longer, I think, than for this to occur. But eventually they got a star. You know, it took decades, but eventually they got a legitimate star. This is not a WNBA star. This is a star. This is as big a star.
Transcendent.
As big a star as pretty much anybody in sports right now. And probably, I mean, probably, Dan, the most important single individual when it comes to any sporting league success, right? Like, you think of Scottie Scheffler doesn't play in a tournament. People are still watching it, right?
Right.
If Patrick Mahomes is out for a game, NBA, NFL is still going to get ratings for that game. Caitlin Clark, I mean, you're talking about 60, 70, 80% cuts in ratings in games where she's injured. This is a transcendent player. She legitimately has a beef to be making a lot more money, which, by the way, she is from a million different sources. She's doing fine. But everybody else in the league should be running away from this description of a merit-based paycheck, because if they're getting a merit-based paycheck, they're going to be writing that check to the men's league.
Yeah, 100%. And what they should be doing is, instead of complaining for more money, is focusing on their skills. I saw a highlight reel from the WNBA All-Star game that Caitlin Clark was ruled out of, I'm sure no one watched, but I mean, it was just cringy, like bricking, you know, because it's an All-Star game, so they're also not even trying.
Right.
And when they're not trying and they're still bricking layups and stuff, it's just like, you know what it looks like? It looks like the halftime game at, like, you go to an NBA game and like the local, you know, 9-10-year-old rec league comes out and they're running up and down the court and chucking shots up. And it's like what it looked like in that highlight reel is so bad. I mean, maybe you should focus on the skills a little bit. I mean, if you had more people, because there are a few now that I've watched because of Caitlin Clark, there are a few players that like bomb some threes and they're pretty fun to watch. But it's far and few between so many of them because the athleticism just you know, what you're used to seeing on the NBA is just insane athleticism.
Yeah.
And guys dunking it from all over the place. Well, you don't get that in the WNBA. So you need something else to be interesting. And that's part of the reason why people are like, whoa, look at Caitlin Clark, because she's doing things that most men can't do. They can't chuck threes from 35 feet with people in their face and make them consistently. So that's what they need to be focusing on, is more of that and less of the complaining. I don't get it. I just don't get how you can look at the numbers and go, yep, we deserve more.
Yeah, a little frustrating to see Caitlin Clark wearing the shirt. I mean, I guess she's just going along with the crew. And yeah. Look, she's going to want to get more money. She deserves a heck of a lot more money. She just, a lot of the people she's playing with don't. Look, some of the detail on this, and one part that is interesting here, Dan, is because the entire history of the WNBA has been basically like your typical government program where, you know, taxpayers, in this case, the NBA, is just funding, tossing money at the WNBA. They have a new media rights deal coming up here. I believe it's next year. They will get a lot more money thanks to the one individual we've been talking about, Caitlin Clark. It's got nothing to do with Angel Reese. That's not why they're getting any more money. But they will get a lot more money. These salaries probably will go up. I mean, should we just look at this and say, look, it's a negotiation. This is a players' union. They're going to try to get more. They should try to get more. That's their lot in life. And, you know, maybe we shouldn't overreact on this.
I mean, I don't blame them for trying to do that, right? That's what any person would do. But, like, you have to look at it and say, at what point are we just shooting ourselves in the foot? I mean, if we just demand so much money that the league goes belly up, what good does that do you? Now, no one has a job. So that's what they have to be looking out for, is this is a league that's losing tens of millions of dollars a year. I mean, that, they should be sounding alarm bells that they lost $40 to $50 million when the Golden Goose came in. The Golden Goose came in. I mean, because that shows to me that whatever the flaws in this system is for the WNBA, like, they can't, like, scalability is not equaling profitability. It's just not. And so that has to be major alarm bells. You get huge interest, and I can understand investing more, et cetera. So it will be interesting to see if, like, the business people behind this can capitalize on Caitlin Clark's popularity and somehow make a profit on this. They certainly didn't do it last year.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you watch the cost to get into a game. You know, if Caitlin Clark is playing in it, it's, you know, $250 get in price. And if it's not, it's $4. Like, it's that right. Legitimately crazy. And, you know, they really don't have a league right now, Dan. They have a person in a league.
They have a person.
And now they're expanding the league by multiple teams. And getting, by the way, $250 million in expansion fees now, again, almost solely because of Caitlin Clark. They should be able to make this work now. This should be a situation like, it's almost like you'd like to say to the players, look, okay, you want to, and I hate the way they phrase it, they'll pay us what you owe us. It's one thing to say, like, hey, you know, like, we want to do better. Like, everyone wants to do better, that's fine. What you owe us is such an awful framing of it. But, like, you want to say this? Say, fine. Okay, now you guys stand on your own. If you lose money, we just go bankrupt. It's over. You get nothing. How about this? We'll just give you a certain percentage of the amount of money that rolls in, and you pay us if you lose, and we'll pay you if we're above. Let's see how that works out. None of them would take that deal.
No, they wouldn't. And because I think that's what they're trying to argue. I think the current, I don't have it in front of me, I think it's 9% or something like that of total revenues is what they make. So essentially 10%, you know, if they get $180 million, that's $18 million. Like, you lost $50 million last year. Like, how do you demand more of the law? Like, I mean, if you're willing to take on the risk, then go for it.
Right. Like, that's the thing. Like, the NFL, like, they compare, like, the NBA and the NFL, like, where they're making 50% of revenues and stuff, which I get. 10% is less than 50%. They act like this is, like, some slam dunk argument. Those other leagues are making money. You can share revenues when you're profitable. You can't share profits when you lose money. They're giving you 10% of revenue, and all of that is loss to these organizations right now. Right. It's just insane.
Right. If they add it to, if they get to 20%, now they're just adding 10% more loss onto it.
Right. It is just embarrassing. But I don't, like, this is a, every year we've got one of these. It's the women's soccer players. It's okay. Like, you could still have a league that people might enjoy. But realize that you're not going to be balling like, every NBA player is. Every NBA player that even when they suck, they can get signed for $12 million. That's not going to be the case in your league.
No. And then the other side of this is the other players in the WNBA, instead of like trying to capitalize on Caitlin Clark's popularity, they're like trying to kill her.
Yes.
Like, it's just insane. Like, a couple weeks ago, she got cheap shotted out of nowhere. It's like they hate her. It is the most bizarre phenomena I've seen in my life. You get somebody here they should be like throwing out, roses and rose petals out when she's walking in to be like, thank you for making people actually watch this game. And they hate her. They cannot stand her. It's something else.
Well, and we know that many people, that is the case, they'll only watch for Caitlin Clark. But you've been a WNBA expert for so long. We know you just have an investment in the league. Dan Andros, a managing editor of CBN News, a WNBA expert and host of CBN's Quick Start podcast. I didn't notice you guys didn't do any WNBA material, Dan, today. I was a little concerned on that.
Yeah, that's my separate podcast. Okay. WNBA talk. Don't ask me to name three other players because I don't think I could do it.
All right, Dan, thanks so much for coming on.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Cespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
I was on vacation last week, and one story cut through. I try to keep the news off as much as possible, but the Coldplay viral video with the couple having the affair getting caught on the kiss cam, that broke through. That was a fascinating roller coaster ride. I was curious to see how Coldplay would handle that moment in their concert the next day. They did send a warning. Coldplay sends warning to fans after Astronomer CEO Andy Bryan's scandal. He said, we're going to use our cameras now. We'd like to say hello to you in the crowd. If you haven't done your makeup, do your makeup now. I kind of like wish they addressed it exactly and just said, hey, if you're cheating on your spouse, now's the time to walk away from your mistress. He didn't go that far, unfortunately. What I was fascinated about, though, is the role of prediction markets in what happened over this story, because, I've been talking to you about prediction markets for a really long time and like the value that they have. And I think the way that they can kind of help us understand the news, not to mention it's just really fun to watch them and maybe make some money off of them. And I was thinking about how they came out with a market that said, will the CEO of Astronomer resign? And this was, from Kalshi, one of the markets I saw. Polymarket had one as well. It was really interesting to follow that in real time. And I was like, well, it's important to look at this. If you're going to try to make money off of something like this, what are the questions you need to know? How do you diagnose whether this is a good investment or not? And it's fascinating because it started at like a 32% chance of him resigning. Is that good value or is it not? There's some questions you need to answer. First of all, I will say some of them you can't answer. Like, first of all, did the CEO and his wife have an understanding? Did they have a separation we don't know about? Did they already hate each other's guts? They were both having affairs. We don't know if it was a serious scandal, because if something like this happens and 10 minutes later the wife comes out and says, look, we've been apart for a long time. We didn't make it public, but, I understood this was happening. That means there's probably a really good chance he's not going to resign. So that's question one, and we don't know the answer to that. What's the status of their marriage? Then you have, what's the precedent at similar companies? What usually happens in these situations? Because we know CEOs are forced to step down all the time because of like Me Too type scandals, but this, at least at the appearance level, seems to be some sort of an affair that everyone seemed to agree on. So is that the case? Of course, we don't know for sure. We're doing some assuming there, but there is a situation where you ask that question, what's the precedent? And we have like a bunch of examples. I was fascinated by this. McDonald's, Intel, CNN, remember CNN? Priceline, a bunch of big companies. When this happens, a lot of times you do see that person resign. So precedent is, yeah, it could very well lead to a resignation. Then you got to ask the CEO's job performance. How does that look? And it's funny because, you know, this is how you look at it in a sports arrangement. When someone is in sports and they do something wrong and they get caught doing a crime, you say, well, how many yards did they have? Like that a lot of times answers the question. All appearances was things were going pretty well at Astronomer as a tech company. So his performance was pretty solid. And so that might indicate, you know what, this is a situation where maybe he's not going to resign. But I think the biggest question lies in my last one here. And this is something that you have to understand if you're going to get into a market like this and try to predict whether this guy is going to step down. The question is, what kind of CEO is this guy? Is he a founder? Is he a visionary? Is he a guy that came up with this concept for this company and he came in and he's led them from nothing to this amazing future where they're making millions and millions of dollars a year, maybe billions? Or is he sort of like a guy who was brought in to professionalize the operation, right? The founders come in, they've got all the technology, they've got all these ideas. Then they take in a smart guy who might be able to raise some money and do some important things. But he's more of a guy who's going to make the shop run appropriately, be a face of the company. And that, by all indications, was what this guy was. This company started in like 2015. He came in 2023, performed pretty well while he was there, but he's not, and if you think about it, this will make this point, I think, specifically, he's no Elon Musk. You think Elon Musk is resigning over this? This guy has a scandal 10 times this size every 2 days, right? Like he's got 47 kids from 38 different women. He's every other day there's another scandal. And like it's part of the charm of the roller coaster that is Elon Musk. Elon Musk's not going anywhere for something like this because he's the visionary. He's the guy that leads the nation. He's the guy who leads the company. He's the guy who is there. He's too important. This guy, not so much. So what happened? Well, we went up to about a 65% chance he was going to leave on July 17th. The next day, July 18th, it was kind of going back down to 43%, wound up rising to 79.3% on July 18th at 8 p.m. Then right before the announcement happened, it was at a 64% chance, which means invest $64, you come out with 100, a nice little profit. And then at the end of the day, a 99% chance, because that is how it ended. The Astronomer CEO did resign. What a roller coaster ride. It was a heck of a thing to watch on vacation. I think almost everybody, including the people involved in the story, are glad it's over. Moving is a big deal. I mean, it is your home, your money, your future. And the last thing that you need is an agent who treats you like you're a side gig, right? This is why realestateagentsitrust.com exists. Glenn Beck, our own Glenn Beck, created it after dealing with one too many real estate agents that talked a big game but disappeared when it counted. And this is a free service to you. It connects you with real professionals in the real estate field, agents who are experienced and full-time and focused on getting results without the stress and the drama. They've been vetted. They have been committed to what they're doing. And, you know, they care about an outcome that is important to you. They want to make this experience good for you, good for everybody. Whether you're buying your first place or selling the home that you've built your life in, you need someone who takes it as seriously as you do. This is not another task that you just kind of cross off of your list. This is your future. You need to plan for this one because it's a big deal. If you screw it up, it's a big deal. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com, RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. Free service to you. The name kind of says it all. It's RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. You know, Donald Trump gets a lot of blame for things that he does wrong. That, you know, the media tells us these things all the time. A long list of things that Donald Trump does wrong, and he gets blamed for them all the time. Isn't it about time, though, he gets credit for something he's done right? Ellen DeGeneres says she moved to the UK because of Trump. So, I mean, there's something that he should get credit for. Actually, you know, I don't even know if that's true. I think this is I don't think it's his fault at all. I think America stepped back and we kind of came together as a nation, both right and left, and said, you know what? We're all set with you, Ellen. We've had enough. We also said that about the UK generally. We said, we've had enough with you. That was in the 1700s. And then later on, we did it again with Ellen DeGeneres. So you know, again, if the trade is a free nation for all sorts of incredible things, capitalism to thrive and the most amazing nation on earth to become a foundation of this world, and then you guys get, you know, a player to be named later, which is Ellen DeGeneres, I think that was a good trade. So I'm just saying that right now. I guess they also got Portia de Rossi as well. So you got the two for one in that particular situation. Go to StuDoesAmerica.com, by the way. Join us, another nation, Blaze TV Nation. It's just $8 a month when you use the promo code STU. $20 off the annual plan, only 26 cents a day. That's nothing. Support voices that won't back down. StuDoesAmerica.com. Get involved with Blaze TV. It's StuDoesAmerica.com.